Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, October 12, 2011. Months of rain in Lake State has caused much suffering.
We even have no plastic sheets which we can use it just temporarily as a tent. As you see, we have nothing at all. We have no food.
And a member of parliament on ending LRA violence in Western Equatoria.
The Aero boys are there. They're using crude weapons. But we need them to be facilitated with the logistics, with the communication gadgets and the food and the training to be done closer together with the army.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Ending violence was the topic at a meeting in Bor over the weekend. The South Sudan Council of Churches organized the meeting in an effort to bring peace to Jonglei State. Politicians from the state and national governments, as well as community leaders, attended the two-day meeting to discuss recent intertribal conflicts between the Murrel and Lu Nur tribes ahead of a larger peace conference. Reporter Manyang David Mayar has this report.
Later this month, an all-tribes peace conference of the state tribes is scheduled to take place at a location to be decided by the Murrel tribes. The meeting this past weekend was to lay the groundwork for that meeting. In order to guarantee the participation of the Murrel and Lu Nur representatives at the larger conference, members of the national and state parliaments agreed to form three committees to travel throughout the region promoting peace between the Murrel and Lu Nur communities. The committees were appointed by representatives of the Lu Nur, the Murrel, and the South Sudan Council of Churches. Jonglei State Governor Kwalma Nyang Duke attended the weekend conference.
We very much appreciate and commended the efforts of the Church of the Sudan Council of Churches, and I have confidence that they will succeed the way they are approaching it.
The governor said that past peace efforts have been foiled by outside forces. He said, enemies of peace are fueling tribal conflicts, especially recent clashes in Pibor and Urur, which left thousands dead.
General Joseph Thor, they got the arms, they give them the ammunition, and that is what resulted into the recent deaths in Murrel and Lu Nur. Also, some arms and ammunition are gotten in Juba. We do not know some people for the Murrel, of course, and we have information that they are going to get their ammunition in Juba. Somebody must be dealing in arms or in ammunition somewhere in Juba, and to the responsibility of the government of South Sudan or of the security forces to find out.
Intertribal conflict has been a problem in Jonglei State for the past several years. The United Nations estimate that over 1,000 people have been killed in cattle raids in their state since June. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
An estimated 70,000 people have been displaced by the violence of the Lord's Resistance Army in Western Equatoria State since 2008. That's according to a new report. The government of South Sudan assured the people of Western Equatoria that it will root out the LRA from the state by approving 5 million Sudanese pounds for military operations in 2010. But the LRA remains active, abducting and killing villagers in Tombora County. Joseph Ngere is the head of the Parliamentary Subcommittee for Security in Western Equatoria. He says Juba is serious about fighting the LRA in Western Equatoria.
Our function is to bring issues and pass resources. The amount we passed was 5 million Sudanese pounds, Gine, and basically it was supposed to be the governor and he's the minister of finance, the minister of national finance in Gos, to see that the money is released. Our work was to see that the money is in the budget and it is still there. As I'm talking to you, I think the money is still there. I'm sure the governor is following it up. I cannot be able to say where the money, but the money is in the finance, as far as I know. Why is it still there? I don't know.
But the LRA is not waiting. They are continuing havoc, and there are people whose livelihood has changed because they are not able to cultivate. They are not stable. So don't you think this should be a matter of urgency for you, who is overseeing the security sector in that area?
As you say rightly, it is a matter of urgency, but the people of Western Equatoria have been fighting the LRA without any external
with little resources. These are Arab boys who have crude weapons, and they are trying their best.
Yes, the money was not supposed to go completely to the Arab boys. The money was to go through the SPLA and the police, so that, you know, the Arab boys together with the army, their capacity are built. The money is not for buying weapons, because we know as the Arab boys are there, they're using crude weapons. But we need them to be facilitated with the logistics, with the communication gadgets and the food and the training to be done closer together with the army. Yeah, it is a concern that the money is delaying. And of course, this also have some impact, because when they hear that the money is approved but is not released, some of them may not be as vigilant as they were before. But we are following that. That's why we formed these subcommittees. And by next week, I will be going to the state and see exactly, and sit with the governor, how far he has gone following the money.
Joseph Ngere is the head of a parliamentary subcommittee for security in Western, Central and Eastern Equatorial States.
Three months of flooding in Lake State has displaced hundreds and put many at risk for malaria and other waterborne diseases. The heavy rains have also damaged crops throughout the region, prompting fears of a food shortage. With the rains likely to continue for at least another month, leaders are working to stem a looming humanitarian crisis. Mavis Burunji reports from Rumbek.
In Mayom Payam, about 10 kilometers west of Rumbek town, Malonga Monpiny lives in a house made of sticks, grass, some cardboard and plastic bags. He lives with his children, six boys and three girls. His house sits just a few meters from a garden that is flooded with water almost 10 centimeters high. They have been living in Mayom for the last 5 years. Malong says the family lost everything to the floods.
We have actually been affected by this flood recently. We normally grow some vegetables, then crops and tobacco all along, and they have all been affected by the flood. We even have no plastic sheets which we can use it just temporarily as a tent. As you see, we have nothing at all. We have no food.
Mayom has almost 90 huts that have been totally destroyed by floods, forcing families to seek temporary shelter on the grounds of the local school. Crops of sesema, pumpkin, green gram, cowpeas, groundnut and okra have been ruined. Conditions are no better in Paloch Payam, according to Mayor Achinyor.
Within Paloch here, there is the river that divides the families, and some of the children that used to cross the river were affected by the flood last year. Even two children died in the river due to the rampant floods. So they are requesting for a bridge to be built across that river, so that it makes them easy to cross the river.
Hundreds of people in Lake State are now homeless because of the floods. Lake State Governor Chol Tong Mayai has enlisted the aid of the United Nations and other organizations to help address the growing humanitarian crisis.
We have formed a ministerial committee to look into this. And this ministerial committee, of course, met with the UN and NGOs agencies here. And assessment teams have gone out. So it is being addressed now, and I've already appealed to the agencies to help in these areas, because there are areas where the crops are going to be destroyed. Of course, we're not prevented, but these people are already going to be displaced, and they need humanitarian intervention.
South Sudan's Humanitarian Affairs Minister, Raal Achul, told reporters last week that at least seven states in South Sudan are affected by the floods, which have created a food deficit of 400,000 metric tons. He says the ministry is working hard to find food to help people get by until next year's harvest. For VOA News, I am Mavis Birunji in Mayom Village in Rumbek West, Lakes State.
Gender balance is an issue for all countries around the world, and Africa is no exception. Civil society leaders from post-conflict countries in Africa met in the Netherlands last week to discuss gender issues. Lona Merkaje of the Sudan Domestic Election Monitoring and Observation Program represented South Sudan. She says authorities in the new nation need to create an enabling environment for promotion of gender balance. I asked her about her role lobbying the government to implement gender-related policies in South Sudan.
My role as a leader of a national network, that is SUDEMOP, and also a part of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, is to try and link all the organizations together. And therefore, with the information that I've brought back, I'm going to try and reach out to the other organizations so that they can factor this in their programs and replan their programs in a manner that women have a position. So we are trying to bring gender mainstreaming in civil society, not to be a government thing again, alone. And on the other side, we are trying to reach out to the government, because as South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, we have this commitment to help constructively.
When people are talking about issues to do with gender, they only look at women, because gender is men and women. Now that you've come out openly to talk about issues to do with women, do you intend to also talk about issues to do with men?
Yeah, you're right. It's unfortunate that people misunderstood the gender concept. But by gender, we are trying to look at a balanced society, a society which shows reality, where women and men move side by side. Therefore, one of our roles is to try and readdress that misunderstanding of gender and try to reach out to everybody who is doing something but has that slight misunderstanding to have a full picture.
What is it that you are going to take the government to task to make sure that it's implemented, based on your experience from the training?
In summary, I would want to say that when we talk about gender mainstreaming, we are not talking about just women representation, but we are talking about gender capability.
And what is it all about?
That's all about having competent women, competent men, put in the right place at the right time.
And do we have a situation like that here in South Sudan?
No. In South Sudan, the situation is not that way. We have women out there who are said to be representing women, but what we've realized is that these women, to some extent, they're not different from those men out there. They lose touch with the society. Therefore, we need to try and reach out to them and also bring up more women who can take positions and have link with the grassroots women, because at the end of the day, those are stakeholders in this process. If one Lona is taking a position and she's there working like her male counterparts, but forgetting about bringing women on board and trying to build the capacity of that women, then I think by then she will be going wrong.
Lona Merkaje is the Secretary General of the Sudan Domestic Election Monitoring and Observation Program.
Forty-3 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Sudan, South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Still to come, a report on Liberia's elections. Back in a moment.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. Shortwave listeners in Africa can find us at these frequencies: 9675 kHz in the 31 meter band, 12015 kHz in the 24.9 meter band, and 13870 kHz in the 21.6 meter band. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
Welcome back to South Sudan in Focus. UN officials say large-scale humanitarian aid for Somalia will continue well into 2012. Famine has spread in Somalia following a long, severe drought. Elizabeth Brace is a spokesperson for the UN Office of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA. From Geneva, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about the situation in Somalia.
In the coming year is to make sure that we can find a sustainable solution, because those kind of drought are recurrent phenomenon. Every 2 years, you have major drought in the region. And we need not only to scale up the emergency humanitarian assistance, but to find real solution, strengthen the country's capacity in order to avoid such a disaster.
Do you know how many people overall in Somalia will be getting emergency assistance through 2012?
As of today, the food assistance partners of the UN have reached more than 2 million people to date. So it represents over half of the food insecure population. But we need still to scale up operation. We need also to push measles immunization campaign, which has reached also 1 million children since July. And there are still 4 million people remaining in crisis nationwide. That's why we must scale up operation, and the main constraint is the insecurity and the threat by the Shabab groups.
So you're dealing with an emergency situation, you want long-term solutions, and you also have to be concerned about the security situation. How do you come up with an overall plan to try to do that?
It's a huge challenge. First of all, we have launched an appeal, a financial appeal, to implement our humanitarian program. The priority is to feed the population, to make sure that the vulnerable people and the weak people do not die because they do not have strength, and they might die from measles, they might die from any kind of disease. That's why the health sector is a major priority as well, together with food and water. But at the same time, we must think about the future in order to find solution, in order to try to support and increase the capacity of the government and find solution. Those solutions are mainly in developing the agricultural sector to permit the pastoralist community and the farmers to be able to cope with recurrent droughts.
There's been a lot of talk about investing more in agriculture and the pastoralists, but considering the state of the global economy, how concerned are you about getting the funds to achieve that goal?
We are quite confident and optimistic. The appeal which was launched for Somalia was very slow at the beginning, but donors have shown generosity, and now this appeal, for instance, for Somalia is 80% cover, which means that we have 3/4 of the financial resources we need. I think the mobilization has been slow at the beginning, but now everybody is aware that those people, those victims, need assistance urgently because they starve, because you have famine, and this famine will spread to all the south region of Somalia before the end of the year. That's why it's crucial and vital to act now.
And what is the total amount that you're asking for?
The United Nations are requesting $776 million. And there are still over $650 million in uncommitted pledges, which means that the international community has responded positively.
How long would this money last?
This money will enable the UN to fund the programs until the end of the year, and this appeal will be reconducted for 2012.
Elizabeth Brice is a spokesperson for the UN Office for Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA. From Geneva, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
Mm-hmm.
You were listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines. Libya's provisional government fighters say they control more than 80% of Sirte, the hometown of former leader Muammar Gaddafi. Lawmakers in Uganda have temporarily suspended the signing of all new oil deals until new regulatory laws are passed. Uganda's parliament made the move yesterday following allegations that bribes were given to several top Ugandan politicians in order to secure the purchase of some of the country's oil assets. And finally, a Nigerian newspaper, The Nation, says police have arrested 5 senior journalists after the paper published a controversial story on its front page last week. Liberia's election results are expected to be formally announced tomorrow. Electoral officials are asking Liberians to be patient as they work to get an accurate account of the votes. VOA's James Butty is on assignment in Liberia and reports from the capital, Monrovia.
Liberians are wondering who is going to be their next president as they await results from the National Elections Commission. At its first news conference late Tuesday night, Elections Commission Chair James Fromoya explained why the first official preliminary results would not be released until tomorrow, Thursday.
We give official results. What we give has to be something that will stand all scrutiny as compared to, say, a radio station. Radio station does not have that responsibility that we have to the people of this country and the international community as well. So we think we need to take our time and make sure that what we release, it is thoroughly checked before presenting it to the public.
Meanwhile, local media institutions have been on the air 24/7 announcing live provisional results posted by the Elections Commission from various polling stations around the country. This morning, I traveled one of the busiest streets in Monrovia to gauge the opinion of the electorate based on the preliminary results that are being announced by the local media.
My name is Sam Mambo.
And what do you think about the elections yesterday?
Oh, yesterday's election was one of the best. It was very peaceful.
Thank you. What's your name?
Melvin.
Okay. What do you think about yesterday's election?
Oh, I feel very fine about the election. As a matter of fact, the election went good. People went to the polling stations. They were able to cast their vote free and fair. And I mean, the result is much encouraging, and I think we are fine with it.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Did you vote yesterday?
Oh, yes.
I'm sure you've been listening to the preliminary results. Do you think there's going to be a runoff?
From my end, I'm sure there will be, for me, for what I see.
H. Benjamin Kewen.
I'm sure you are listening to the preliminary results as they are being announced on the local radio and here. Do you think there's going to be a runoff?
From what I'm saying now, I really trying to predict that there's going to be a runoff.
Uh-huh. If there is a runoff, it's going to be between which parties?
From what I'm trying to see here, if there will be a runoff, it's going to be between the CDC, Congress for Democratic Change, and the Unity Party.
It seems that this is 2005 again, repeat.
Yes.
The Elections Commission has made it clear that the results being announced by the local media are just provisional and do not represent the totality of the electorate. But if the street prediction of the unofficial results holds, then it seems Liberians should brace themselves for a repeat of the 2005 presidential elections when then-candidate Ellen Johnson Sirleaf went to a runoff with George Weah's Congress for Democratic Change Party. The only difference this time around is that George Weah is the vice presidential candidate, while his CDC party has been led by Ambassador Winston Tubman. James Butte, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
Officials in Kenya say Chinese demand for ivory has prompted a surge in elephant poaching and the illegal smuggling of elephant tusks. Now authorities are looking at ways to curb demand and to better defend the elephant population. VOA East Africa correspondent Gabe Joslow has more from Nairobi.
Business is slow at an art market in downtown Nairobi. Some blame the falling value of the shilling, some blame the lack of tourists. But for whatever reason, artists are having a hard time selling their wood sculptures, their necklaces, T-shirts, and paintings. But one dealer, Harrison Onyango, says there is always demand for one forbidden item.
Actually, ivory trade is very much illegal here in Kenya. And we normally see tourists, especially Chinese, who are very much interested in ivory, but we normally tell them straight and up front that we don't deal in ivory because it's an illegal trade. But to them, they always insist and try and tell us, just get me any type of ivory, I'll buy at any price. But we always just tell them up front that is very much impossible.
Onyango said the penalties for selling ivory in Kenya, where the trade is completely banned, are so severe it is not worth the risk. But it is still being sold. Dr. Esmond Martin conducted a study of the illegal trade in conjunction with the British conservation group Elephant Family. He says ivory is typically smuggled out of the country raw and in bulk. It is taken to factories in China, where it is carved and then sold out in the open.
The shops are there to cater for Chinese and for foreigners. So nobody's going to hide ivory in the back street. Nobody's going to see it. You see it everywhere. You see the most expensive hotels and the most expensive areas in China. So we want the Chinese to implement their own law on the sale.
China won permission to import ivory in 2008 from an international wildlife trade convention known as CITES after implementing a certification system labeling each legal ivory item with an official identification card. Martin says since the ban was partially lifted, demand has increased in China, and he has seen evidence that more illegal ivory is making its way into the markets. In his own surveys, Martin has seen a 50% increase in the number of ivory items being sold in parts of China since 2004, and that the majority of these are being sold without identification cards. And elephants in Africa are increasingly threatened as a direct result.
In the last few months, the elephant poaching has increased in parts of northern Kenya. And this is due to various reasons, but most people think it's due to the Chinese demand that's increased the price, because most illegal ivory is going to China. It's as simple as that.
The Kenyan Wildlife Service devotes much of its resources to combating poaching. KWS species expert Patrick Omandi says the agency has tried to raise awareness with the Chinese.
We have hosted many Chinese delegations, you know, both from the private and the government sector. We've taken through our challenges. And most of them apparently do not know that this ivory they use come from poached elephant.
A spokesperson for the Chinese embassy in Nairobi declined to comment on this topic. Kenya has enjoyed a huge surge in Chinese investment in recent years as Beijing looks to Africa for minerals and natural resources. China has spent millions of dollars to rehabilitate highways leading in and out of the Kenyan capital and other projects, including a new hospital. But Amandi says Kenya's economy relies on its tourism, 70% of which is based around wildlife.
For us, we are seeing our elephants as the backbone of our tourism, the backbone of our economy. And we see that we can make better use of elephants when it is alive than when it is dead.
Omandi says Kenya lost more than 80% of its elephant populations before the CITES Convention and a worldwide ivory ban was put in place in 1989. He says since the ban, the population has more than doubled. But he worries that allowing the partial trade of ivory and the increased demand in China has opened the window for more illegal killing. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
We close the show tonight with the music of Franco Luambo Makadi. The song is titled Tre Impoli.
Salaka bongo bongo Okolo valikambo yo tala simate Okolo valikambo yo banga batote Bonanino salaka très impudique Okoko tananda kwa bato oyoka sonite Bonanino salaka bongo e
Osalaka na yo très poli e
Salaka bongo Okoko tananda kwa bato beta porte terre olekani direct na chambre à coucher. Buna nini osalaka très impoli. Buna nini osalaka bongo.
The music of Franco Luambo Makadi, the song Tre Impoli. That brings us to the end of tonight's program with John Tanza in Nairobi. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a good evening.